number two pencils. Known for being common. Famous for being erasable. Nobody thinks much about them, so let's have some fun. Let's find out why number two pencils are secretly incredibly fascinating. Welcome to a whole new podcast episode, a podcast all about why being alive is more interesting than people think it is. My name is Alex Schmidt, and I'm not alone, because I'm joined by the wonderful Dana Gould. Dana Gould is an amazing television writer. His credits include The Simpsons and Parks and Recreation and his own show Stan Against Evil. He's also an amazing stand-up comedian. His most recent album is called Mr. Funny Man, available from the Kill Rockstars label. And I want to make sure you know about an amazing YouTube show he has been making. It is called Hanging with Dr. Z. Dr. Z in this case is Dr. Zaius from Planet of the Apes, but this is a world where Dr. Zaius hosts a like 1970s style late night show. It's one of many show links. I extra recommend it. It is a blast. It's got a band. It's got legitimately huge guests. The advertisements are maybe my favorite part. Anyway, as you can hear, Dana is busy. I am so glad he came by this show to talk about number two pencils. One extra note here. The other note is that this episode sounds good. All the audio totally works. It's all pleasant to listen to. The audio will switch to Zoom internet phone call audio. It's not a problem. It's a good podcast. You'll enjoy it. I just find some people like to get a heads up. So here is that heads up. Also, I've gathered all of our zip codes and used internet resources like native-land.ca to acknowledge that I recorded this on the traditional land of the Catawba, Eno, and Shikori peoples. Acknowledge Dana recorded this on the traditional land of the Gabrielino Ortongva and Keech and Chumash peoples. And acknowledge that in all of our locations, Native people are very much still here. That feels worth doing on each episode. And today's episode is about number two pencils. This is the top patron chosen topic for July, the top pick from you folks. Thank you to Jesse Eldridge and also to Norm from Cheers for the suggestion. And I'm thrilled we got so specific. We made it a number two pencil, which you also may know as HB in your country. We'll talk more about that later. Anyway, there's an amazing show in just this one pencil type, plus all the pencil history that led up to it. So please sit back or take a walk to the pencil sharpener, because that is the main way you get to choose to stretch your legs during grade school. Even if you go to the bathroom, it's like weird if you go too often, you know? Pencil sharpener is normal. Anyway, here's this episode of Secretly Incredibly Fascinating with the great Dana Gould. I'll be back after we wrap up. Talk to you then. Dana Gould, it is so good to see you and talk to you. And if you don't mind, like normally I start by asking guests their relationship to the topic or opinion of it. Before that, I have like a family history question for you, if that's not weird. Do you
this podcast is over.
destroy the tapes. But I was curious if you have any relatives or ancestors who were involved in the pencil sharpener business. Any Goulds who were doing that?
I don't. Nothing comes to mind. It sounds very. It sounds a little too high-minded for my branch of the family.
Cool.
My branch of the family is prison guards, policemen, and telephone company linemen.
Okay.
So before those were needed, it was probably, we need a guy to lift this. That was who they would call.
That I've heard some of that about mine as well. And because I was researching, and there's one of the early American pencil sharpener companies was Gould and Cook in Leominster, Massachusetts.
You know what? It's worth looking into. It's worth looking into because I am from Massachusetts.
And I was like, maybe Charles Gould of these sharpeners, but who knows? That's just a thing
my
for
grandfather,
you to wonder about. I'm sorry.
It's funny. I've often described my family, my dad specifically, as Archie Bunker without the elegance and sophistication. And my brothers followed suit, but purportedly my grandfather, my dad's dad, who I didn't really know, I murdered him when I was very young. That's a joke is stolen from my friend Bill Broaddus. It was just too good to not. My friend Bill
Broaddus, the true killer. He must be brought to justice.
My friend Bill Broaddus had a great joke. Because I don't remember my mother. I was very young when I killed her. supposedly my grandfather was a very sort of sharp-witted, elegant kind of dude. So who knows? There might be pencil sharpening money back in there.
Well, amazing. I feel like I've left you with a mystery. I'm sorry. But beyond that, generally number two pencils, it seems like, you know, as a professional writer, you were connected to them. You showed me a bundle of them right before we started.
And as I was connected to them as a professional writer, as a parent, my house is full of them. As a public school student before computers, I had tons.
Oh yeah.
I'd say the first thing I thought of the Enterprise from Star Trek, because if I am doodling with a number two pencil, I always, and this goes back to third grade, fourth grade, I will draw a horizontal line and then I will hatch it down and do the saucer part of the Enterprise and then do the back of the Enterprise. And it's almost like an automatic reflex now. I don't even think about it. Like, that's what I doodle.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Are you a big doodler? Cause I'm not, but I can draw the Enterprise, you know,
I'm not, but if I do, I just draw the Enterprise. Cause I assume that the ladies dig it. You know, it's like if a lady, if a chick sees a doodle pad full of Star Trek ships, they're like, this one.
The raw magnetism of it, right? How do they...
the Bondian allure. Yeah, exactly. They know where their bread's buttered.
Yeah. Well, and since you mentioned school before computers, they had added some computers when I was in grade school, and we were still like drowning in number two pencils. It was still... just, I think it's the automatic go-to... In at least American schools, maybe all schools, like it's this specific model. It's like, oh, if you don't have one of those, you're not functional. You can't even write.
Yeah. Well, you needed them also for you needed them also for SATs to do the little.
Yeah.
To fill in your ovals.
Right. Your whole future suddenly rides on it. Like, you got the right kind, right?
It really does.
Oh, boy.
It really does. Yeah. I was always afraid that I was doing the right answer in the wrong line. And then I would get a zero.
Yeah, those were such a crisis, all those tests. Why do we have to do that so early? But we did.
Awful. Yeah, I know. I'm going through it with my kids right now, and they just.
Oh yeah.
And I try to explain to them it's okay. It's not as important as it sounds. You're gonna be fine. In the year of COVID, I have an 18-year-old, a 17-year-old, and a 12-year-old. And, you know, in my 18-year-old is like a person now. You know, she's starting college in the fall. She's incredibly bright. She's going to Berkeley as a microbiology environmental ecology major. So it's like, well, you'll work. You know, she's basically going to study arresting climate crisis. Like, she's going to school to yell at you for using plastic bags. but for the summer, just to have a job, she's driving DoorDash, which is like, right. And I will often go with her just because she's so funny. And she'll literally like, ugh, what's this? It's a sad meal. I was like, you know, it's like, what's this? It was like a salad and fries from Wendy's to a woman alone in an apartment.
Oh man, right.
Yeah, it's like, oh yeah, that is a sad meal.
Yeah, it's like having a police scanner for food. Like, it's exactly this happened.
Wow, that's exactly right. We had to deliver a waffle cone to somebody, and it was like getting the Holy Grail. So we go to Hollywood Boulevard, we go to the Kodak Center, we find the Cold Stone Creamery, we go, we get a waffle cone, then we have to drive it to West Hollywood through town, TikTok, because it's ice cream. So TikTok, right. My friend, it's, you know, and then we get the Bernie sticker on the door, but no tip.
Man.
Yeah.
And that, you know, if you're one of the listeners, you're one of the good ones. But I can't imagine ordering ice cream through a delivery service like that.
If you can't afford to tip, go get your own ice cream, because you know what's cheaper? A gallon of ice cream from the store. Right.
And nobody has to feel like they're in the movie Speed, where they have to like beat a system to get it to you. Terrible.
Get a gallon of Seal Test, and you can eat for a week. Is Seal Test low? Was that Massachusetts or is that national?
Oh, I don't know what Seal Test is.
It was the ice cream in Massachusetts, and I realize now what a horrible name. Seal Test. We want to evoke animal testing. with the delicious taste of ice cream.
Well, and I think from here we can get into the first chunk of the information about pencils. Because on every episode,
a nation waits.
No. On every episode, our first fascinating thing about the topic is a quick set of fascinating numbers and statistics. And this week, that's in a segment called "They Come Numbering Just as Fast as They Can," because every girl crazy about a stats obsessed man. And that name was submitted by Mike Brazil. And we have a new name for this every week. Please make them as silly and wacky and bad as possible. Submit to SipPod on Twitter or to SipPod@gmail.com. And this is a big number section this week. We got a lot of them. First number here is 7.5 inches. And that is the typical length of a number two pencil. 7.5 inches. The last three quarters is the eraser and the ferrule, which is the metal piece that holds it. But that's the size before we start sharpening them and so on.
7.5 inches.
Yeah. It's just kind of where they're at.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wonder how they settled on that.
It feels kind of random. There's also, they don't happen nowadays because pencils are so cheap and plentiful, but there used to be things called pencil extenders, which is where you've sharpened your pencil down so it's hard to hold now because it's so short.
Like a cigarette case almost, like a cigarette holder?
Yeah, it's like that, yeah. So that used to be for like prolonging the life of super valuable pencils, was a pencil extender.
Wow.
Weird, different time.
Yeah. You'd see hobos going through the trash for a pencil stub.
Right.
To write their hobo memoir.
To write like Apple's 5 cents on something because it's the Depression. And
here's a topic for a future show.
Oh, yeah?
Hobo code. Hobos would have codes for like, this house will give you money, this house will feed you, this house will...
I heard about it through John Hodgman, but I didn't know if he was kidding or not. I didn't know if it was real.
No, he's... One, the fact that you heard about it through John Hodgman is the least surprising thing I've ever heard. No, it's true. It's true.
Oh, that's awesome. Great. I'm glad. I read about so many codes. I was like, I hope this is real because it's going in my brain. Here we go.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, hobo code is fascinating. We had a thing at the Simpsons. We were fascinated by hobos. And we had a thing that the great George Meyer set up as a rule, that when you put hobo into a script, you had to follow it with the parenthetical with Bindle. that was mandatory. And one day we just had a hobo walks into the room and George went very, guys, I don't know what effing planet you guys are from, but I'm looking at the script and I see a hobo and I have no idea if he has a bindle or not. And then one day I walked into, you know, we're all writing and the script is on a big monitor in the room. And I walked into the room and I looked at the monitor and it said hobo as a dialogue slug. And then below it in parenthetical, it said all business. I just collapsed.
Man, and that secret, like, it's no one watching the show knows. It's just on the page for
us,
you folks.
Yeah, just for us. Yeah. Hobo, all business.
All business.
Yeah, it's just that destroyed me.
No
that
time for a biddle. Yeah.
No, look, we have business. Let's just get to this. It's amazing.
Well, the next number here is 21. And it turns out that 21 is the number of different grades of pencil, because number two is a grade. And in the US, we only really have 1, 2, 3, and 4. But in the rest of the world, they have 21 grades. And the number two pencil lines up with HB in most of the rest of the world. So if you ever see HB on a number two pencil, that's like an international version of that.
Right. Yeah. Our numerical pencil grading system is like a refusal to go metric.
A little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's just like going on with the grades of these. And HB is right in the middle of the world scale. And that means that it's a medium amount of hardness and a medium amount of darkness.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's kind of a happy medium Goldilocks pencil.
Because a number three pencil is harder than a number two pencil. So a number one pencil must be like oatmeal.
Yeah.
The lead actually drips out of the pencil slowly in a string. It's just...
Right. You have to deliver it in your car really quickly or it melts. Otherwise.
Yeah, exactly. You know. Exactly. It's like, yeah, it's the DoorDash ice cream of pencils.
Yeah, and we're kidding, and that's accurate. We'll have links about it. It's all very technical and kind of visual, so we'll link about it. But yeah, sure. These pencils vary in their hardness and their darkness, and you know, number two seems to work. It's not one that, right. That people are like, this is terrible, I need something else.
That tracks.
And the next number here is 1972. That is the year that Scantron technology was invented. And according to EdTech magazine, there had been technology to score multiple choice tests since the 1930s.
Okay.
But Scantron was the first like widely used system. And according to Mental Floss, the way Scantron tech works is something called optical mark recognition. So it shined a beam of light through the paper, and then whatever bubbles blocked the light, that's what it recorded. So that's part of why they wanted to like know exactly what pencil you were going to do, so they would know what shadow you would get.
Oh, wow. And then, yeah, and that's why it was like fill in your oval completely.
Yeah, because that could apparently they're more advanced now and they can do double sided now. But back then it was like the light has to hit this exactly, like get the right pencil, do it right.
Right. And yeah, an incomplete oval could end your career.
Right. Right. Every Ivy League school's president will come by and tell you that you have failed.
Right.
And, you know.
That was
crushing.
One of the main elements of the stop the steal paranoia is incomplete ovals.
Oh, yeah.
That's what they're doing down in Arizona, is scanning for incomplete ovals.
of their theories, that's got to be the most charming, most positive one, right? Like that's almost hanging chads, which kind of happened. You know, that's fine.
Right. Yeah. I'm waiting for a team of psychics was dispatched today.
Right.
I always like the idea of a team of psychics, like they're all.
Yeah. Do their brains like stack or something? Is it that they all have to touch foreheads and it's more powerful? I don't get it.
Yeah. It can't be a very chatty van ride. You know, it's like they all. You know, like, just occasionally somebody will turn and go, yeah.
Well, just a couple more numbers here. One of them is 1890. 1890 is the first year when a major brand sold yellow pencils. Because number two pencils, it's not like a rule, but they tend to be painted yellow. And there's an amazing book that's a source for a whole bunch of this episode by Henry Petrosky. It's called The Pencil, A History of Design and Circumstance. And Henry Petrosky is a professor of both engineering and history at Duke University.
Oh, yeah. So this was so in his wheelhouse. It was insane.
Yeah. I've read an amazing like 350 page book about pencils. It's so good.
Yeah, but I bet it is because they are one of those things like, oh, yeah, we did need these.
Yeah. Yeah. And he says that there were yellow pencils before this, but a company called the L.C. Hartmuth Company in Austria rolled out a pencil called the Koh-i-Noor, And it's named after the Koh-i-Noor diamond that's part of the British crown jewels.
Right, yeah.
And so they wanted to, like, emphasize that it's special. And before 1890, most pencils were a dark color like black or dark red or purple. And so they made it bright yellow. It was a huge hit. And then other companies copied them from there. So, yeah, like their first big sales event was the 1893 exposition in Chicago, like the World's Fair sort of event there. Like, this is a turn of the century development that they're yellow.
Yeah, but I do like that it just went and people are like, yeah, okay, yes, pencil should be yellow. And it was just like the sort of 100th monkey realization. Like, nope, okay, we got it.
Right, yeah, it's just like, oh, this is suddenly what they are now, permanently. Great.
We had to make all these decisions. It was like, at one point, we're like, we're going to get our milk from cows and, like, you know, not dogs. It's like, they all make milk.
Also, and in a few other countries, it's not common to have yellow pencils, and it's common to have a green pencil in Germany or Brazil.
Really?
And to have a red pencil in Australia. They just, for some reason, didn't get on board with the rest of us with the yellow pencils.
So I'm assuming it went from, green pencils went from Germany to Brazil with the Nazi high command when they fled after World War II.
That's exactly what I thought.
Brings the pencils. Yeah. Brings the pencils. It would blow their mind if it's a green pencil.
Yeah, that's like breadcrumbs for the investigators, too. They should have switched, right? Like, why not assimilate all the way, you know?
Yeah, very clumsy.
When the last number here, this is 100,388. So slightly over 100,000, 100,388. So that is the word count of the book To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee. And that book got used as an experiment for how long a number two pencil lasts. Someone transcribed the book to test how many words they could write with a number two pencil.
And they got down to the end of the book and they were at the end of the pencil?
Yeah, and apparently they were sparked by an issue of Discover Magazine in 2007 that had a factoid that said one number two pencil can write 45,000 words. But according to NPR, this had never been tested. Right. And so a guy in Pennsylvania tested it. NPR also says...
I'm hoping he was either in prison or somehow housebound. Like, he was like, he was just surrounded by kids going, Dad, we're hungry.
Oh, yeah.
And do it. Important work.
Well, so NPR talked to him, and the other thing he said is that he recruited volunteers to help him initially, and then everybody quit. So it was just him at the end, which is not surprising.
I don't blame him, yeah. Yeah, or he tried, you know, he had a room full of monkeys also doing it.
Oh, yeah.
Infinite number of monkeys with an infinite number of pencils.
Right. But he says, and I assume they passed it around, they used one Dixon Ticonderoga number two pencil. They transcribed the entire book, over 100,000 words, and then still had 1.219 inches of pencil left.
That's a lot of pencil still.
Yeah, that's an actual thing.
Over an inch.
It's not like a total nub or something.
Grip by that. Wow.
But yeah, so this guy found out if you use one number two pencil and are, I guess, careful, you can write more than 100,000 words or write, you know, an entire copy of To Kill a Mockingbird.
Did anyone tell him, you know, you can buy a copy down at the store? What? There's a really funny story about Stephen King. Wrote the book Under the Dome, big book of his about a city that wakes up one day to find that it's under a dome and they don't know why. And when he finished the book, like his daughter or somebody said, like, oh, it's just like the Simpsons movie. And he went, what?
No, really?
Yes.
He wrote that after the Simpsons movie?
Yes, and he wasn't aware of the Simpsons movie. And he was like, what?
Because I've heard of that book, I truly assumed it was the other way around. Like, I thought.
It wasn't.
Okay.
Or I'm sure they're probably concurrent because it's too big of a book, but I think that, like, had the idea at the same time.
Wow.
And, he was very funny about it. I mean, we had him on the show. He's a delightful person, and cool. He was very funny about it.
Yeah, the Simpsons movie was 2007 and Under the Dome was 2009. I'm not a King fan. I thought it was just the other way around. This is amazing.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. He was very funny about it. He was like, and he was just like, what?
Yeah. And then, like, his new book is Frostilicus or something, you know, like some, like, come on, man.
Yeah. Donut lard, lad.
Keep up.
Yeah.
Off of that, we are going to a short break, followed by a whole new takeaway.
This is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back. What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
I'm going to be thinking about that a lot. But there are two main takeaways for the main episode, and I think we can get into them. The first one is takeaway number one. A number two pencil's quote-unquote lead is actually carbon and clay mixed together.
Really? I thought it was graphite.
Yeah, and graphite's a form of carbon, so that's one of the things.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. I still get the point.
It's true, yeah. You'll be in the bonus round and everything? Yeah. but there's a bunch of sources here. That Henry Petrosky book, also a book called Paper by journalist Mark Kurlansky. So we have pencil and paper. And then The Atlantic and Mental Floss as well. Yeah, people call that stuff that writes in a pencil lead. That's what I've kind of always heard it called, but it is
right. Yeah, exactly.
It is graphite, and the Atlantic says graphite is the stablest form of the element carbon. So carbon and lead, separate elements, very different. And the Atlantic also covered a team at Stanford that did an experiment in 2014 where they tested whether you could turn graphite into a diamond, and their analysis suggests you can, because it is carbon. You just have to do the most pressure of any kind of carbon to turn, you know, the equivalent of pencil lead into a diamond.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, so you can make a ring out there, folks.
It'd be a great smuggling tool.
Oh, to smuggle eventual diamonds, like you sneak them through that way.
Just like a caravan of tanker trucks full of pencils.
Right. Well, and it turns out there are two main reasons we got that name pencil lead for it. And this book, Paper, by Mark Kurlansky is a really good source. One of the reasons is that there were a few very ancient Romans who used lead like a pencil. They would sometimes write on papyrus using a metallic piece of lead. Huh. And so just the whole thing is a piece of lead, and that's called a lead pencil. And we also got the name pencil from the Romans. They had the Latin word penicillium for a writing brush. So then it came from there.
Oh, it's weird that we didn't get penicillin from that, but we did get
That's what I thought. It sounds exactly like penicillin. But nope.
Yeah. Nope.
And then the other reason is the first graphite mining happened in the 1500s, and people just didn't know enough chemistry. They assumed it was some weird kind of lead that they'd never seen.
Oh, okay.
The first big discovery was in Britain, and Mark Kurlansky says, quote, a large oak tree was uprooted in Cumberland, and an odd black mineral was discovered clinging to its roots. This led to the digging of England's first graphite mine and the development of the pencil, end quote.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, so 1565, they found the first And now that we have better ways to get graphite, it's not a problem. But there used to be a huge like push to find graphite. Like it was like finding a super valuable natural resource in the ground.
Like gold or minerals or something. Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And we won't get way into it. But Henry Petrosky's book has a story about a guy looking for gold in Siberia who accidentally found the largest graphite lode ever found and then made a fortune selling it and was like a graphite baron for a while.
That's hilarious. Cause you know, like there's graphite.
But yeah. And that British discovery in 1565, according to Menel Floss, quote, early chemists weren't exactly sure what the useful gray substance actually was. They assumed it was some sort of lead, and the term pencil lead came into use, end quote.
All right.
So they just messed up.
It worked.
Yeah, and so graphite is this resource that now is, it feels very plentiful because of modern production, but also because now, unlike the first graphite pencils, now we mix it with clay. And clay is a substance that like stretches out the graphite we have, right? And then also it still draws a line.
It's like cutting cocaine with baby formula.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
suddenly we're the villains in a Miami Vice episode.
What if the people at Ticonderoga or whoever, it's a bunch of very normal pencil makers and then one weird guy with razor blades. It's like, you don't need to have this aspect, man. We could just do the process.
There's the Tony Montana of pencil. Well, won't you try my pencils, man? You're not going to go with their pencils. The first box is free. I peddle them at playgrounds.
Like the scar is drawn in pencil and then you can just erase it. If you like, it's fine, actually. It's just flip it around and dig it.
It writes itself. Yeah.
But yeah, and the mixing with clay is where we really got these grades of pencil and this pencil scale, because when you're using graphite, you just kind of get a kind of line. But once you're specifically measuring clay to balance it out and to change the composition, then you get grades. And that's how the number 2 pencil was created. That's how we got it.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent.
And that number 3 is harder because it has more clay. And it's all just how much clay you put into graphite. But I never think of it as having clay. It just looks black. Like it just looks like it has graphite.
Right.
And that's it.
Interesting.
And the other main takeaway of the episode, we can get into it because it's how this happened. Takeaway number 2. The modern number 2 pencil came from Napoleonic France and from Henry David Thoreau.
Really?
Yeah. There's 2 people to know about here. And one of them is the very famous Massachusetts writer, Henry David Thoreau. Mm-hmm. And then the other is a French guy that I think nobody's ever heard of, but he's from Napoleonic times in France.
Wow. How did Thoreau figure into this?
It turns out we'll kind of get to him because he's second, but he comes from a family of pencil makers. Like he was born into the pencil business in Massachusetts there.
Wow.
And I just figured he was a writer. I didn't know how he got to that cabin and everything.
Hanging out in the woods. Here he comes.
There he goes.
I like they can't see your cat, so it sounds like Thoreau came and went, which is great. but the first person here is a Frenchman named Nicolas Jacques Conté, and he lived from 1755 to 1805. He, before the French Revolution, was a painter, and then once the Revolution happened, he said, "Now I'm a scientist. I'm going to like come up with stuff that helps Republican France. I love the Republic."
I was going to say, like a painter will get drafted, but a scientist, I think.
Oh,
please,
well.
I'm a painter. You
right. I'm whatever job's important and not on the front lines. That's what I am.
Exactly. I faked insanity to get out of the KISS army, you know, as the
But that's the number one thing they want, man. Big mistake. No.
True. I was a fool. I did my hitch.
Yeah. Was it scary being on the last helicopter out of Detroit, or was that a normal situation for you?
People clinging to the skids. I don't want to listen to New Wave. It's too late. The Cars and Blondie are at the gates.
Right.
That would be a great cartoon, actually.
Yeah, we should get some pencils. Ah, ah, there we go.
Look at that.
Hey,
look at that.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Well, weirdly, speaking of aviation, so this guy, when he became a scientist, Conte, his first move was to get into hot air ballooning. He was like, I will figure out how hot air balloons can be part of Napoleon's army and help him win battles and aerial scout and stuff. Huh. And that ended up being hard because he lost an eye in a hydrogen explosion. And in most pictures of him, he has an eye patch. And so it was pretty wild.
Right.
But also in the meantime, he was like, any other science experiment you want done, I'll just try to figure it out. French government ended up asking him to try to figure out a way to invent a pencil that didn't need very much graphite. Because in 1793, Britain and France go to war. British Navy blockades France. They can't get British graphite or other good graphite. And so the government is running out of pencils and running out of material.
Okay, right, yeah, you're sure. Oh, funny, yeah.
Because at this time, graphite is, you know, gold, oil. It's something.
It's a commodity.
And so, according to Henry Petrosky, the French Minister of War asked Conte to find another way to generate good pencils. And within a few days, he figured out that you could mix graphite with clay and then shape that into a shaft, bake it, and put it between pieces of wood to make a pencil. And from there, that, like, this is the person who figured out that graphite clay mix and eventually the number two pencil.
So are the that's amazing.
Yeah.
Are modern pencils in two halves?
Yeah, it's a subtly glued together two pieces of wood around a piece of graphite and clay. And paint kind of hides it. Yeah.
Yeah, I just assumed it was like drilled and inserted.
Yeah, I thought they were sticking it in there, but no, it's like it's too.
I don't know what to believe anymore.
Right. Yeah, apparently since like the mid to late 1800s, they worked out this system of two machined pieces of wood and boop, just sandwich the graphite.
So there's got to be there's got to be a specific kind of glue.
Yeah, glue
that really bonds. Like you don't even know it's glued. So there's a crazy bonding glue.
Yeah, it's really tightly engineered. It's really
somebody
cool.
Invented pencil glue, and they're just kicking back.
And I don't know who actually. Yeah, that's a cool
thing. The cat that walked by the computer.
Yeah,
had crystals in his urine that was causing him great distress.
Sure. Yeah.
So they gave this pill that loosened his urethra to make it less painful for him to go to the bathroom. Somebody had to invent that. And someone out there is just kicking back, spending all that loose cat pee hole money.
Right. He's like, and I bought a statue of my achievement. And everybody's like, that's a gross statue. I don't want to, no. I'm going to avert my eyes on the way in up the big driveway.
Exactly.
No.
Exactly. They're like, did he like wake up and go, I've got it. What? Why were you thinking about that?
Right. Yeah, there's some pencil glue genius. I don't actually know who did that. They did great.
Amazing. Yeah.
But and then so Conte comes up with this and suddenly pencils are easier to make. The raw materials are cheaper. Pencils are like democratized. You know, everybody can get one cheaply. And then from there, you know, various pencil manufacturers try to keep up with this and try to do endlessly better versions of it. And one of the first to do it was John Thoreau, who was a pencil maker in Massachusetts and had a pencil making facility.
Oh, okay.
And then his son, Henry David, came and like worked in the family business for many years and spent like a lot of time. He also spent time teaching and stuff like that. But apparently in 1841, John Thoreau Jr. dies. And so Henry David's brother, John's son, Henry David, in grief, is like, I'm closing this school. I'm just going to come work in the family business for a while, and does a lot to like innovate their systems and especially start selling their pencils on a graded system of 1 through 4. And according to Henry Petrosky, he did such a good job that, quote, there is little doubt that before Henry David Thoreau was the literary celebrity he has come to be, the pencils he and his father made came to be without peer in this country, end quote. And so Thoreau pencils were like the top pencil in the U.S. in the 1840s. And since they used a 1 through 4 scale, we had that scale. And number 2 was the popular one, the middle one.
Wow. That is impressive.
Yeah. And he like did that, stopped working there in 1845 and went straight to the woods and built his cabin at Walden Pond and wrote Walden. Like it was the next thing he did after pencils was Walden. Or his time there and then the book. But yeah.
His cabin he just saw as being made of giant pencils.
Oh.
I'm gonna have to save these pencils for when the giants come. I'll disguise them as a cabin.
Yeah. Like, how's the cabin going? I need a lot of clay and graphite.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll pretend I'm writing a book. That will excuse my time. His whole thing was he was sure giants were coming. Pencil eating giants.
Yeah.
Amazing.
But yeah, Henry David Thoreau is one of the main pencil people in the history of them, especially in the US and specifically getting the kind of pencil that we all use. Like I'm not a visual artist. I don't think I've ever owned a pencil that wasn't a number 2 pencil. I think that's just what I had.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you get a 3, you're like, God, what? It's too hard. You're like, what is wrong with this thing?
It must feel really weird. Yeah.
I wish I was dead. What is wrong with it? At some point, the crayon people showed up like Visigoths at the gate. It was like crayons showed up like the advent of psychedelia. Like, what is happening? The pencil people dealt with the crayon people the same way Lawrence Welk looked at the strawberry alarm clock. Like, what are you guys? The crayons come in incense and peppermints.
Like, they make the pencil guy say sock it to me against their will.
Sock it to me.
Folks, that is the main episode for this week. My thanks to Dana Gould for diving so deep on something that might seem pointless to some people. Anyway, I said that's the main episode because there is more secretly incredibly fascinating stuff available to you right now. If you support this show on Patreon.com, patrons get a bonus show every week where we explore one obviously incredibly fascinating story related to the main episode. This week's bonus topic is strange pencils used by famous people of the 20th century. Visit sifpod.fun for that bonus show, for a library of more than 4 dozen other bonus shows, and to back this entire podcast operation. And thank you for exploring number 2 pencils with us. Here is one more run through the big takeaways. Takeaway number 1, a number 2 pencil's quote-unquote lead is actually carbon and clay mixed together. And takeaway number 2, the modern number 2 pencil came from Napoleonic France and Henry David Thoreau. Plus tons of numbers and stats stuff in this one about everything from Scantron sheets to the potential lifespan of your number 2 pencil. Those are the takeaways. Also, please follow my guest. He's great. Dana Gould, incredible television writer, incredible stand-up comedian. Beyond links to that, we will have a link to his podcast, The Dana Gould Hour. It is full of comedy and interviews and new fun all the time. Also, I want to point you to an amazing internet show called Hanging with Dr. Z.
Hanging with Dr. Z is probably my favorite YouTube show right now of any of them. It's just that fun and funny, and the guests are incredible, and there's nothing like it. Please check that out. The show links are your friend. Many research sources this week. Here are some key ones. The key source of this episode is a book called The Pencil, A History of Design and Circumstance. That is a book by Henry Petrosky. Dr. Petrosky is a professor of both engineering and history at Duke University. Go Blue Devils. Also, that incredible book was written in 1990, so obviously I went way beyond that. There's another great book we leaned on called Paper by Mark Kurlansky, and then a bunch of great pieces from Mental Floss, The Atlantic, NPR, The Washington Post, and more. Find those and many more sources in this episode's links at sifpod.fun. And beyond all that, our theme music is Unbroken Unshaven by The Budos Band. Our show logo is by artist Burton Durand. Special thanks to Chris Souza for audio mastering on this episode. Extra, extra special thanks go to our patrons. I hope you love this week's bonus show. And thank you to all our listeners. I am thrilled to say we will be back next week with more secretly incredibly fascinating. So how about that? Talk to you then.